Welcome to Season 4 of the Chai Brave Podcast. This is your invitation to grab a cup of piping hot chai and get ready for chaivizations that nourish the soul and inspire your everyday. This season, we're diving deep into the world of sustainable living. More than ever, we need to find ways to live in harmony with our planet. So throughout the season, I'll be talking to climate tech entrepreneurs, exploring practical tips from experts, and uncovering the joy of living a life that's good for you and good for Mother Earth. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Chai Break Podcast. Let's face it, we're living smack in the middle of a climate change era. And the headlines aren't exactly helping my climate anxiety, and I'm sure not yours either. As a global citizen and a mom, I often find myself spiraling with questions like, what can I do? Does my small effort even matter in the big picture? Well, cue Shivani Ramesh, a fellow dancer I was recently introduced to at my local dance meetup. Shivani's perspective on climate action reminded me of a simple truth. Tiny drops form an ocean. Every small, seemingly mundane effort definitely adds up. Shivani Ramesh is my guest today, and she is a strategy and implementation analyst at NG Impact. Growing up in India, Shivani developed a deep appreciation for the environment and a commitment to sustainable practices. This passion led her to pursue a degree in environmental engineering with a minor in technology and management from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Shivani has worked with Step Change and the Center for Energy, Environment and Water, focusing on carbon accounting, life cycle analysis, and energy finance. At NG Impact, she leverages her expertise to scale decarbonization solutions across various sectors. Shivani is passionate about empowering citizens to understanding their role in combating climate change at a local level and personal. She aims to create scalable and implementable solutions that address global environmental challenges and contribute to a greener, more sustainable future. Welcome to the Chai Break Podcast, Shivani. I am so excited to have this chivization with you.
Thanks, Shweta. It's so great to be here. And thanks again for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm really excited because I think one of the things when it comes to climate change and sustainability and all of these things, they seem like these big, very broad terms and often very overwhelming. And for an everyday citizen like you and me, like just going about our lives and looking at headlines, like we talked about, like climate anxiety, you know, we stay in that state of climate anxiety. But when you come into your being and understand that you as an individual have the power to create impact, I think that's very liberating and it kind of, you know, calms your nerves down. So that being said, you know, as they say, charity begins at home. And for you, the seeds of sustainability or the concept of sustainability were sown very early on in your life. Can you share the story behind that?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us who grew up in Indian cities, it was very difficult to kind of ignore the effects of sustainability in our cities, in our homes. And so I grew up in, I like to say I saw different kinds of India. When I grew up in Mumbai and Chennai. You know, year on year, we would see floods kind of devastate the city. And one year, my grandparents' home was basically flooded. We lost like years worth of photos and, you know, things from my dad's childhood, just gone in the floods. And I think I was about 14 or 15 at the time when those Chennai floods happened. And I just realized that it's not some faraway problem. It's hitting so close to home. It devastated my grandparents so much. It was the home I grew up in. So I think it's hard when you grow up in India to kind of live in that bubble that sustainability is or climate change is a faraway problem. So I think one was just growing up in India at that time. The second that, you know, I kind of mentioned to you when we first met was that I grew up in this school called Rishi Valley, which was a very interesting school. It was in like rural Andhra Pradesh, 3 hours close to Bangalore, but that was the closest city. So, you know, we were in this kind of, I like to say haven, because I think Rishi Valley took us back to what it means to, you know, have a simple life. We were taught that, you know, everything on your plate is put there because it's nutritious for you. And you finish that food because someone out there is hungry. And, you know, that food is a gift to you. Similarly, we were kind of taught like, conserve every drop of water. It's not easy to sustain a community of almost 1,000 people in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Rishi Valley was powered by like a solar power plant that the alumni sponsored. You know, it's like those, what are now being called like circular concepts of, you know, like energy can be, you know, derived from the earth or even just saving food and water. It was something very fundamental to my upbringing. Mm-hmm. So I think those two together kind of made me have this great appreciation for the planet and, you know, the gift that it keeps giving us. And then as I grew up, I was almost flummoxed by why do we keep taking advantage mm-hmm. of this planet for our own gain? I remember when I learned about the Industrial Revolution in high school in history, and my friends and I thought, like, surely they knew that, you know, rapidly industrializing wouldn't be great for the planet. But
they did it anyway.
That was kind of the opportunity cost that they decided to go ahead with. And so, mm-hmm. like you said, I think inspiration begins at home. Mm-hmm. For a lot of us, climate change is something that we've seen growing up, and that's what, you know, fuels our passion to work in this field and mm-hmm. know that we're making a difference, however big or small it might be. So
yeah. And speaking of that, you know, something you mentioned in our conversation was bite-size action, you know, and this is something you believe in. And it's also something your mother has done mm-hmm. both in India as well as here, all the way here in Westchester, New York. I'm sure our audience would love to hear her story and draw inspiration on how they can get involved at a community level, kind of irrespective of their geography.
Yeah, definitely. So my mom is, sometimes people ask me, why do you care so much about social impact? And my only response is, you have not met my parents. That's why you asked this question.
Yeah.
Because if anyone meets my parents, they know that they are the two most passionate people about creating social change and, you know, making sure that a few other people's lives are improved. Mm-hmm. And that epitomizes my mom in every way. So when I went to Rishi Valley, my mom found herself an empty nester. And, you know, she often tells her, like, I didn't know where to put all this extra time that parenting had, you know, scheduled in her life. Uh-huh. And we live in a very, like, I like to say, like, sheltered area of Chennai. Mm-hmm. But despite being so removed from the chaos of a big city, something that really bothered my mom and a few of her friends in the neighborhood was just trash on the streets. And a lot of neighborhoods in India, you know, have this problem. Different people have different like approaches to it. But my mom's approach was, what's going to happen if we're all constantly complaining mm-hmm. and nobody does something about it? Mm-hmm. So she organized a few people in the neighborhood. She started doing like, you know, weekly Sunday trash cleanups. They would go around and, you know, take trash from across the streets and then put them on a few corners of our neighborhood. And then my mom has been a civic volunteer for a long time. She was one of the people involved with the first Joy of Giving Week in India mm-hmm. and bringing that to life. So she had lots of connections within the city of Chennai's administration. And so she spoke to a few people and said, like, can we improve the frequency of how trash is collected from like this part of the, you know, area surrounding the Adyar River? Mm-hmm. And so kind of the dual effort of compiling all the trash and then improving that frequency helped her and her friends, you know, clean the streets of Kottapuram is what they like to call it. But mm-hmm. my mom went a step further. I think she realized that if this was a problem that, you know, so many people in the neighborhood were facing mm-hmm. and she was able to mobilize them to do something about it, what were the other problems that, you know, this people of Chennai were facing and that they didn't have necessarily the resources or, you know, even the community to know where to start in addressing that.
Right.
So she started a magazine called Citizen Matters. She started the Chennai chapter, and she's now a trustee of Citizen Matters and the foundation that it's built off of. And their whole thing is improving access to knowledge and resources so that citizens, mm-hmm. Right now in, I think, 6 cities across India, can make more informed decisions about mm-hmm. even something like, who am I electing to be my representative?
Yeah.
Do they care about the same problems I care about? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they sometimes do spotlights on neighborhood initiatives, and that's such a big part of it is yeah. when you know you're not alone
yes.
in something as big and looming as climate change, mm-hmm. that sense of community makes it feel that much less isolating. And it can be very inspirational to kind of get you moving and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. keep you inspired on that path. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I definitely think my mom's, she started with a bite-sized action. She literally started with picking up a piece of trash on the street.
Yeah.
And my granddad always used to joke, like, you have an MBA and this is what you're doing with it. Like, you're picking up trash. But yeah. that's really how she started. You know, she's completely devoted to mm-hmm. civic change. So
yeah.
I think that's an example of how it can start small and mm-hmm. become mm-hmm. something so incredible.
Yeah. And as you're speaking about trash, you know, all of my memories, you know, growing up, like the downside to it, like you always heard of, like, you know, people would clean their yards, clean their front, and then they would take it. And then, you know, if there is an empty lot next to them, they would just dump the trash there, or it would literally be dumped onto the street. You know, and those are some things I vividly remember as a child, looking at all of that and oftentimes getting angry and wondering, like, why? How do they think this is right? So I feel like those little changes, if you can make and bring about awareness, because I feel like a big part of climate change and sustainability and all of that is education and awareness and just resources, right? For where people can go. And I think initiatives like, you know, the one that your mom is part of, I think is part of the big part of the change that can come about.
Definitely. And kind of the second part of your initial question, it's not geography constrained. I mean, right. In India, it's something like so many of our households have a footprint. Mm-hmm. And so my mom's mission is to, you know, help people improve it. Out of the many topics Citizen Matters covers, one is sustainability and mm-hmm. what individual households can do. But like you mentioned, I have an aunt up in Westchester who does something very similar in her town. And I went up to visit her this weekend because she was doing like a very cute Christmas sweater swap uh-huh. on Sunday. So instead of, you know, everyone buying new Christmas sweaters,
right.
a group of the town came together and just did like a clothing swap. And I thought that was such a cute idea.
Yeah.
But I got to asking her, like, how did this start? And the similarities with my mom's story were incredible because she had something very similar. She, you know, had a high school going kid. And every time she picked him up from school, she saw that there were so many plastic water bottles lying around. Mm. And she was like, this is very odd. Like, why are high schoolers using plastic water bottles when so many of them take water bottles to school?
Yeah.
And then she realized that sometimes, you know, kids with health conditions, their parents may not be as comfortable with them using water fountains, for example. Mm-hmm. And so once that, you know, 1 liter, whatever that they bring from waters, then they go to the vending machine and they pick up a water bottle and then they forget where they leave it. And at the end of the day, the janitor's responsibility is to throw it away.
Yeah.
And so she realized that this is the next generation. Like, they have to be able to understand the consequences of their actions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so she started very similarly as a concerned citizen. And her town is very small in Westchester County. And then when she got to talking to a few neighbors within her town and friends from across the town, she realized almost every neighboring town had some sort of a volunteer sustainability committee. Mm. People would organize events to improve awareness amongst, you know, the neighborhoods. And especially, you know, so many of these parents do want to educate their children, young, like elementary school children, on what sustainability is. And so she got a few of her son's friends' moms and said, let's do this. Let's like try to start educating the next generation on what this is. And so they started as a volunteer, you know, sustainability committee. They organized events. Like, I think it's so similar to my mom. It's almost funny. It was called Stash the Trash. So they would go out to the streets and like pick up trash and uh-huh. stash it in the corner. And then she did the same thing, uh-huh. almost parallel to my mom, back then, of like, you know, getting it collected and making sure that it wasn't,
yeah.
making sure dogs weren't eating it and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And so they have so many cute events now. They have Stash the Trash. I had to like think of a few ideas for an Earth Day event mm-hmm. that they had. Where it was really the same. They had like Sustainable Westchester talk about some of their initiatives, and they made a whole day out of it that families could come and like learn mm-hmm. about sustainability. And mm-hmm. and now they're a part that, you know, advising the village board of trustees. So they've helped the village get a lot of funding from NYSERDA for any of the clean energy mm-hmm. projects. Mm-hmm. So something, for example, like private homes installing solar panels,
yeah.
and they may not necessarily get rebates for pumping electricity back into the grid, but the city or the village in New York State can get some government funding if they can prove that so many of their residences have installed renewable energy or something like renewable heat pumps or, mm-hmm. you know, transitioning mm-hmm. like cleaner cooking oil, stuff like that.
Yeah.
New York State has so many like schemes available. Mm-hmm. And this committee was part of the reason that almost, I think, $200,000 came to funding because wow. they really mm-hmm. helped their village say like, ask the community, what are they doing for sustainability? It can benefit you
right.
to encourage them towards that. Mm-hmm. So I think it really isn't geography constrained. It yeah. takes one person to see a problem and like talk to others about it. Mm-hmm. And then once momentum's on your side, it's very easy to keep going, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say it's easy. I'm sure they've all faced their challenges. Yeah. Again, once you form that sense of community and you realize you're not alone in trying to solve this problem, at least for me working in climate, that's the thing that always keeps me going.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And even you can convert the skeptics too, right?
That's probably where the hard part comes in. You know, it's like, I think whenever I meet a friend who's like, oh, I'm kind of bored my job, you know, I don't like working in tech or banking anymore. They stop talking to me about this now because they're like, you're always, you know, working climate. I say that because it's really some of the most incredible people you'll ever meet. And I don't just mean brilliant minds. That's obviously a huge part of it. We need some of our brightest minds, like understanding how to get ourselves out of this problem. But I think it's equally just some of the most like compassionate, passionate people.
Exactly.
You know, they know the problem at large. Similar to what drives your climate anxiety, a lot of them have young children or nephews and nieces. And they're always asking themselves, like, what will I say when the next generation asks me, what did you do to secure my future?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that I just sat idly by and watched the world burn. Yeah. So I think the community is what keeps a lot of us going. And that's what helps the bite-sized action turn into more of a movement.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, Dia is 9 now, and I constantly have these conversations with her. And I think it starts with the little things. Like, I think it was her 7th birthday when I actually explained to her that balloons are like not something sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped having balloons. And for a child, it's hard, right? Like someone else, like especially in the parenting community, can look at me and being like, that is just so like, why do you want to do that and take away the little joy?
Yeah.
Right? You know, but I feel like I feel responsible. I'm like, and you're right, I always try to tell her the very same thing. I'm like, because remember, long after I'm gone, this planet is yours, you know, and this is what we can do. And like something she's very passionate about is doing arts and crafts, right? So she's always like using tape. And now I'm like, do you realize like tape is like plastic? Mm. So, you know, I've like tried to turn her. I recently bought like a roll of like paper tape, you know, and then she's like, I want clear tape. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, but that's plastic.
Yeah.
I can see like, you know, her annoyance at first. It takes a little and then like, you know, she like eases into it. Yeah, because a lot of these things, you know, like there are these little stores that these kids go to and half of the stuff is just plastic stuff. And I'm like, why do you want that? Like you're at an age, like, you know, let's gift you more experiences than like all of this plastic junk that eventually you're going to throw away. So definitely it's not easy. But again, like if you can do the little things you can do starting in your own home, you know, impact will definitely come along.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why for a young child, it's hard to understand the long-term implications.
Yeah. Because
there's a whole phenomenon studying why adults are struggling to make sustainable swaps. It's called the intention-action gap. You know, it's like so many adults say that climate change is a looming, you know, factor in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That they have a lot of anxiety about. But when it comes to behavioral changes, like switching to more sustainable products, sometimes they're not willing to pay a cost premium, not even the experience premium that makes more sense to me than a cost premium.
Yeah.
And so if it's so hard to get adults to swap, no, of course it's going to be hard to get a child to swap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the same for me. I remember the first year my mom got these like eco-friendly candles, like recycled wax or something for my birthday. And I was like, this doesn't even like burn properly. Like what is going on? And then my grandmom was always in the belief that you shouldn't like blow a candle out because you know what's happening.
Yes.
When you light a candle, it's like, you know, putting the village for the god.
Yeah.
So my like great. If my enthusiasm for candles is gone, we'll just like use this as a reason to stop candles altogether. That was my Dia moment when it's the same. But I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. And you know, we keep talking about like we're at that point where we cannot ignore climate change, right? And while it's very easy for us to get caught up and get overwhelmed, you know, it's also empowering when we see the path forward that we can take.
Yeah.
So as, you know, to my listeners and to me and for people like everyday citizens, what can you and I and everyone start doing today to bring about that change in your, you know?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. It's honestly first admitting and kind of realizing that that climate anxiety can and should be channeled into action. Mm. I think that I mentioned to you when we first spoke that one of my best finds of 2024 was going to these events where a friend of mine has put together a group, and her whole slogan for this thing is called the Soapbox Project, is channeling climate anxiety into action. Mm. And, you know, building that community off of that, finding other like-minded individuals. And I've learned so much from them on, you know, what you can do to start a sustainability journey. So mm-hmm. I think it depends on, you know, the city you live in and the initiatives already underway, trying to understand how you can support them. Luckily for us, maybe unlucky for some, but the internet is right at our fingertips. And we have this huge repository of information right there available to us. So sometimes it just starts with a Google search, you know. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of magazines similar to Citizen Matters worldwide mm-hmm. that are trying to help citizens understand problems that matter to them. So, for example, in New York City, there is I think it's called NYC Connect, something like that. I'll have to check on that name. But it's very similarly trying to understand what citizens of the city can do towards, you know, making it a better place to live. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And something that I learned through Soapbox, but also NYC Connect, like, reiterated, is that you can send like postcards to your city council member and try to, you know, encourage them to bring like measures that matter to you up to the ballot. So sometimes mm-hmm. it's really about like understanding your local political structure, which sometimes is, you know, so challenging. There's so much jargon. It's almost made difficult to understand. True. But at the same time, it is our responsibility. And I think it's our right to understand the politics that involves mm-hmm. our life. Mm-hmm. It's beyond just, you know, who we elect as a representative, but do they align with us on the measures that they represent our vote for?
Yeah.
So I think it's staying involved, staying active. It's, you know, it's really just a quick Google search of like,
and I feel like now with social media, you can like follow each of your council members and your, you know, local representatives and kind of see, you know, what they align with. And, you know, like you said, like postcards, it can just be like DM them, like, you know, tag them, do all of that, right? Yeah.
I think there's the access to our political representatives is not a problem anymore. Mm-hmm. The access to resources is actually not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
I work in sustainability. I have to, you know, research a lot of these measures. Most of this is public information on the internet. Mm. It has to be public information because of the way it impacts our lives. So it really starts with, let's say we live in New York City. Sometimes I just search like NYC sustainability initiatives, right? Mm. ChatGPT can help you with that.
Right.
Google can help you with that. Yeah. And then you can even start funneling into like, I'm very worried about the trash on my street, like trash collection incentives. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know, but this like huge move towards like community composting is very accessible. What I did was like I went to my building and I was like, why don't we have a compost bin? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because actually I tried putting my compost in another building and they're like, hey, your building is supposed to have its own compost bin. Don't put yours
here. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that stemmed from the fact that my mom, who lives also in New York City right now for her master's, did the same thing. She went to her building and said, why don't you have a compost bin? Like, aren't you supposed to now with the new New York City law?
Right.
Keep everybody accountable. It's a group fight, right?
Yeah.
Most of us cannot afford to turn the blind eye. Mm-hmm. And we should make sure that our peers and, you know, mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. help us on a day-to-day basis know the matters that matter to us. So mm-hmm. I think part of it is just start to research things that matter to you. You know, again, I said information is not inaccessible in any way. It's not scarce either. And then start having a conversation with them. Ask your building super, like, do we have, for example, a composting bin? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where does my recycling go?
Right.
Initially, I went to see my recycler. I was like, half of this is not recyclable. Like, where is this being processed?
Yeah.
And I was a pain in my management company's, like, mind, because I was like, hey, quick question. Like, they probably never had a resident who even cared about that, right?
Yeah.
It's keeping everybody accountable.
Yes.
And keeping yourself informed. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think once people start and realize that there are initiatives they can have support, it is such a gratifying journey.
Yes.
But then you just keep going.
Yes.
And
yes.
you realize the impact you can create.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the composting initiative, I'm very, very glad because my building just launched it mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago. And they had to convert one of their storage rooms into the composting facility. And, you know, I was very quick. I ordered my little compost trash bin.
The small one you can keep in your kitchen?
Yes, in the kitchen. And I was like, because what I did was initially the first few days, I had to find like bags to actually put it in. And then I had to go and I was like, oh, I can't throw this in the compost. So I had to empty it out. And then finally I found like, again, like you said, biodegradable trash bags for composting. Mm-hmm. And I just found that. And it was an education because from my daughter to like my in-laws are visiting now. And I had to be like, no, this can be composted. And I would literally open the big trash can we had. And I'd be like, why is an apple scraped there? It should be here. Like, you know, and 1 week in, I'm telling you, everyone's following it. They're putting it very religiously there. And I take it down and I dump it. And it's really, really like gratifying, like you said.
Yeah.
And I just swapped out our like, you know, little sponges, like our dish sponges to this plant-based biodegradable option. You know, the Scotch ones are just like, they start all coming out and they're plastic and all of this. And finally, when I was looking this up, I found it. And I feel like these little swaps, mm-hmm. you know, it just like, for me, I'm like, okay, I'm trying my best every day. You know, I can't do 100% of it all of a sudden overnight. But if I can make these little changes, you know, I'm doing my part.
And it comes back to the idea of bite-sized actions.
Yes.
Because habits form the same way. You mm-hmm. can't mm-hmm. revolutionize your life overnight. Oh, you start stacking the habits.
Yes.
And that's how habits form. Mm-hmm. And it's great because it takes 21 iterations to form a habit. That's 3 weeks of, for example, like you telling your family, like, don't throw away the habits. In 2 more weeks' time, they'll start following suit.
Yes.
You know, you won't need a reminder to remind them. So I think that's one thing. It takes like 21 times to form a habit. Keep yourself motivated for those 21 mm-hmm. days and it'll just become part of your routine. Mm-hmm. The other thing is like, we live in an age where if you think of a product, chances are it already exists.
Yes.
And this climate week, I felt like I met so many product entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and it's tough because it's hard to, you know, combat the cost of making a sustainable product because those are usually more expensive for mm-hmm, mm-hmm. producers and then also for us as consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think similarity between all the entrepreneurs was that we know enough people in our lives mm-hmm. and like the market study shows that there are enough people who care about sustainability that we knew that was a market we can tap into.
Mm-hmm.
There are like sustainable dishwashing pods.
Yes.
Nicol Drops, the sustainable house cleaning products. There's a company called Grove, I think. And then there's a company called Blue Land. I'm not sure if that's right, but they make sustainable like home cleaning products, but they're also doing like maternal care, diapers.
Yeah.
You know, in India, there are so many brands.
Yes, in India, in fact, there's a brand called Bare Necessities. You know, my friend is the chief sales officer. She's on the podcast this season, Deepthi. And every one of their product is completely, they're a certified B Corp and everything is zero waste. It's just absolutely amazing. So yeah, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, and there's a product out there if you
need to. There is a product.
Yeah.
And if you can move around your budget a little bit.
Yes.
It's not that much more expensive.
Exactly. Yes. Maybe instead of buying that new dress, you know,
exactly.
you can probably just like, yeah, no, totally. There is a way. And, you know, one of the things is that I always say, like, you know, your vibe, your tribe. And I think when it comes to climate change and sustainability, like you said, finding that community and building that awareness is what will lead to that, you know, bite-sized action. And, you know, to wrap up, I wanted to ask you about one thing, like at work, like both professionally and personally, is there a project that you were recently involved in that, you know, really is getting you excited, you know? You see hope that, okay, there's a big chance that this can turn things around for the state of the planet. And, you know, when someone hears about it or how they can get involved, I'd love to know.
Oh, I feel like it's a bit high stakes to say it can turn things around. But
In whatever small way.
I'll tell you what's encouraging to see is that there are so many bright, innovative solutions across the sustainability spectrum. I work now on like decarbonization solutions, right? It sounds probably more daunting, like industrial decarbonization solutions. When I first started, I had like a 2-month training because I just, even though I was an engineer by training, I didn't really understand some of the technologies until somebody taught me the sustainability repercussions of it. And the other thing, so solutions is one thing. There are a lot of innovative solutions. We work now on like ways to improve like the emissions of a factory by encouraging them to think about, would you consider like renewable natural gas or what's called biomethane instead of natural gas? Because the emissions from natural gas can be pretty high depending on where you are. Would you consider like biomass boilers instead of your huge, you know, like steam boilers that are also natural gas driven? And, you know, a lot of times these products are getting more affordable, even at the industrial scale. Between now and 2030 is the next like goalpost here that everyone is thinking about. The forecasts are showing that the prices of that will go down. And I think as we continue to make it more mainstream, energy savings is going to become cost savings.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a single client of mine that's going to be like, oh, no, we don't want to save money.
Exactly.
That's not how the human mind works.
No, especially not in this capitalistic world.
Exactly. And at the site level, if I talk to them and they say, actually, this can save you this money, like, sign me up, you know, this can improve our bottom line. I'm not into that. So I think as these ideas become more mainstream, the products we're thinking about will become more affordable. And then, you know, the cost savings will just continue to increase. So, you know, we have to keep going. The solutions are there. They're incredible. I know people who work in sustainability, who work on like consumer action and, you know, gamifying apps where you can, there's one called Commons that, you know, helps you track your own sustainable actions. And I'm trying to think of a few. There are so many amazing solutions. And then in India, I worked with a think tank, right? They have one called like sustainable water, sustainable livelihoods, powering livelihoods, you know. It's about how India can create jobs through this energy transition. So the talent is there. The motivation is there. It's going to take sustained motivation to make these solutions more like affordable. And then I think when that happens, it may not help us like turn the curve, but it'll flatten the curve. And at this point, to make sure we're not like zooming towards that 4 degrees
like,
and projecting, it's about to like flattening that curve. It sounds cliche, but we just have to keep doing what we're doing. And there's always going to be like a there's going to be room for more people working in climate, I think. And so I really hope to see like despite the situations around us, I hope to see people more fueled, honestly, by their climate change to do something more about it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm optimistic still.
That's great.
I hope it stays for the next 5 years. But yeah.
That's amazing. This has been so amazing. I've learned so much from you just in having this conversation. So to wrap up, let's play a little rapid fire spill the tea.
Okay.
How do you like your chai?
I like my chai like very kadak
chai.
No sugar.
Okay.
My
lots
family,
of ginger.
Ginger.
Yeah.
Sometimes lychee. I think it's cardamom.
Yeah.
And then my mom makes fun of me. Sometimes I even like put saffron in my tea,
ooh,
which is pretty good. But I definitely make my chai a bit like bitter compared to most people. But that just helps it become more like, I don't know, English substitute for kadak. I think it's like
No, because it's also, you know, what happens is I've experimented and I'm also like a chai snob. So like grating your ginger versus like just smashing it makes a huge difference.
Oh, you said grating it is better.
Yeah, grating it is better.
Oh, I don't have the patience for that, but I can try.
Like it makes it so much stronger.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. So for me, it's like usually they say like half a chai, like spoon of chai per person. I go like 3/4 to 1 spoon of chai per person.
Yeah.
And then I do ginger and cardamom. And then I'm very particular about the oat milk I use.
Yes.
I only use the Oatly one because I've tried
Trader Joe's
and Chobani and they're all terrible.
I second this. I'm just like that.
They are not good for chai. So.
Yeah.
But I'm Tamil, so I'm like coffee over chai.
Coffee also. Yeah. Kind of, yeah. So I have both, yeah. So do you have a favorite snack pairing with it? Or do you just like it plain?
I love aloo bhujia with chai.
Aloo bhujia with chai. Okay.
At least, like, that's my, what's the word, sensible and, like, realistic snack here. When I'm back home, I love, like, potato bhaji.
Yeah.
With chai, I feel like that's usually my first request when I go by Tanya. My grandmom straight up calls it a bhaji party because she would make all her friends and we saw like bhaji.
That's awesome. And lastly, what do you do when you're not working? What do you like to do when you're not working?
Well, one of it is, of course, dance. That's how we meet. Yeah, so I love finding communities that share, especially Indian classical dance. Yes. I think it's such a beautiful art form that we can use to stay connected to the past. I love that. You know, it's something that also keeps me grounded in my religion sometimes, in my faith. Because we learn so many of the Hindu myths by doing Bharatanatyam. And I think that's such an incredible thing to give our children. That gift of history. So dance is a big one. I'm trying to get more into like cooking and baking.
Nice.
I'm getting more into reading. I'm reading this book called like Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. And it's like, I'm not usually a nonfiction person. Growing up, I was a huge like Harry Potter nerd and, you know, those nonsense books as well. So I was mostly fiction growing up. And now I'm reading more like, I want to say psychology nonfiction. Once in a while, if I have emotional bandwidth, I'll read a book about like climate change. So the other one I'm reading right now is called The Great Derangement. I would actually really recommend that to you, Shweta, and maybe some of your listeners. It's by Amitav Ghosh. It's probably one of his most like under-the-radar books. But it's essentially saying like in 30 years from now, will we look back or like future generations look back and think, were they deranged to not think about climate change? And it's the topic that I started my, you know, little field with at the beginning.
That's awesome.
It's interesting because I don't really see historical fiction about climate change, but it's kind of, I hope we don't repeat this again of, you know, just exploiting the earth and like what we did age to even think this wouldn't have consequences. So I'm still in the process of it. It's like my third time trying to borrow it from the New York Public Library because it's always on hold. I always forget to go pick it up when I have it. So hopefully that time's a charm for me. But so far, so good. That's definitely something I'd recommend for people like anxious about climate change, trying to inform themselves more about what the approach has been in the past and kind of, again, keep yourself accountable and saying like, okay, this is something I'm passionate about. I'm going to use these messages to keep myself on track to do something about it. So
this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for all your wonderful insights and, you know, just spreading some climate positivity around, you know, that change is happening and the impact will be seen at some point. You know, the first step being leveling the, you know, plane first before we start positively, like, decreasing our carbon footprint.
And I'm a cautious optimist, I think. But I think we're still in the stage where it's age-old, you know, mass problem. You don't see returns immediately. You know, it takes a long time. And like, sure, maybe this is taking longer than people expected. But it's, you're talking about a really big change on one of the biggest systems we know.
Yes.
So it's going to take a while for us to, you know, see the impacts.
But I think as we're doing it, one of the things that can keep all of us going is the positive stories that we can share. And I think that's where, again, community plays such a big role.
Definitely. I think community, keeping each other accountable and motivated is what will help us get to that point where we start to see results. I've met some of the most incredible people in my life by working in climate and interacting with people who care similarly for the problem. So I can't recommend it enough. But yeah, thanks again for having me. This is a really great conversation on our gloomy Tuesday morning here in New York.
Yes, I know, right?
You thought winter had started, man. It just did a 180.
I know. So. Thank you so much, Shivani. This has been a pleasure.
All right, see you soon.
Yes, thank you so much, everyone. So tune in to our next episode coming out very soon. Bye until then. Thank you for joining us for season 4 of the Chai Break podcast. We hope you leave here feeling inspired. To stay connected, follow us on Instagram at chai_break_podcast. Want even more sustainable goodness? Sign up for our monthly newsletter at chaibreakpodcast.substack.com. packed with exclusive content, new episode drops, and more. And don't forget to like, share, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Your support means the world to us.